Welcome to today's episode of Legacy Literature, where we are focusing on innovation and transformation and ways to improve your leadership and legacy. Today's guest is nothing short of but extraordinary. She's going to take us on the journey where we're going to explore how smart cities are leveraging AI and new innovative technologies and creating smart cities for all with integration through accessibility into urban innovation and transformation, which all can agree we need more than ever. Today's guest, Dr. Claudia Folska, is highly educated, a woman that I'm so impressed at how she managed to achieve great success, having a bachelor's degree in psychology, be able to also leverage that and also build on and have a degree in and PhD degree, obviously, in cognitive psychology and science and also urban design and planning. We have truly subject matter expert here, in addition to obviously her master's degree on business administration. But she brings also understanding what is today missing anywhere we look at around the world. And without disclosing what that is, let me ask Claudia to share that herself personally and welcome her here in studio. Claudia, welcome. How are you?
Well, thank you very much, Isabella. I am well today. I'm so excited to be here with you. It's an honor and a privilege to be on this program with you. And thank you for making this space available.
Absolutely. I have to say an honor and a privilege. It's mine as well, because I am just blown away, first of all, of your achievements. And now we can disclose, how do you manage to achieve all of that, given that you are dealing with something that nobody would guess, even now, I'm sure with everybody watching and listening will not think of, and then also will ask, how is that possible? Do you mind sharing about your journey and when and how do you discover disability that you faced with and how that changed trajectory of your life?
Sure, thanks, that's a great question. Normally I would say it's irrelevant, but in fact, it is most relevant to what I've achieved and accomplished in my life. I started losing my vision when I was 5 years old, and I've lived most of my life without vision other than light perception. So for right now, as an example, I can't see anything like other than light. So what I kind of grew up with is something called fundus flavumaculitis, and that is scar tissue that develops on your retina and blocks your vision. In addition, I also suffer from glaucoma and cataracts, and those are pretty common. But the retinal disease that I have inherited is a genetic mutation, and it has caused me to have just light perception. Now, I say it's irrelevant because on the one hand, I do what I do regardless of not having vision. But I also think in some way that not having vision has profoundly enabled me to imagine the impossible possible and do it. And so when I look at the world, especially now, and we referenced earlier smart city design, that those smart city designs are happening in a vacuum. In other words, not really with folks with different disabilities, whether they're blind, deaf, hard of hearing, cognitively impaired, or mobility impaired. I assure you, they are not at this table building the solutions that would integrate all people to have great access to smart cities when they come to fruition and they're fully deployed.
That is so heartbreaking, I have to say, because it's easy for us that are never faced with any of those challenges to go about our day-to-day life. But specifically in the United States, you have to go pretty much everywhere driving. You have to really pretty much co-depend on the system that is infrastructure there existing or not existing, but also in other parts of the world too. And I can't even imagine how challenging that is. Can you please share your perspective? What we're faced with right now today, and how this look like for your day to day, and where do you see major problems?
That's such a great question. I love it. Well, first of all, with regard to my degrees, the specific area of my research interest had to do with how blind people specifically navigate the built environment and the implication it has to neuroplasticity. And then I put the findings of that research into the expansion of the largest investment in a multimodal transit system in America at that time was here in the Front Range of Colorado called the Regional Transportation District. And after doing that, I decided that I should run for the board of directors. And in 2012, I became the first blind woman elected to public office in the great state of Colorado. Now, I say all of that because, everything that a person without a disability does, a person with a disability does, and that's access everything from housing, transportation, education, telecommunications, and the digital world. Now imagine for a moment that we had some fabulously famous architect build the tallest skyscraper in the world. And we come to the grand opening of it, and everybody is so excited to take the elevator to the top. And then all of a sudden, the architect says, "Oops, I forgot to put the elevator in, but hold on a minute," and slaps one on the outside of the building and kind of gets you close, but not quite there. I think when we consider our urban design, regardless of whether it's, with advanced technology and smart city design or not, we've been doing stuff like that, not building by and for people with disabilities at the very beginning in the native architecture and design. And that's why it doesn't really work as effectively as it should or could. We're missing great opportunities. And if you think about it, the older you get, the more likely you are to have a disability.
Wow, that is very thought-provoking, and I can agree with you because fortunately we're both aware of the state of our nation, how much we have more chronic illnesses, how much more we have obesity as a result of all the other issues, and that as we age and we're also having tremendous aging population, how is that transferring into newer generation in terms of habits of like how do we live, quality of living, right? And then also how this extends into in terms of what level of support needs to be there, what we need also as a public, as a citizens, fellow citizen to support you and others as you're navigating those complexities. And I love that visual example of the afterthought because it's a putting the band-aid and trying just to kind of check the box, and that never works, never works. It's just never right solution. So how did you leverage your board of directors role in working with RTD to really create that bigger awareness and make a also fundamental change within transportation industry?
Well, that's a really great question. Let me first start by saying in America, 10,000 people a day, can you imagine a day, are aging into retirement? So people who are older adults combined with a population of people with disabilities is one, let's see, 151 million Americans right now, roughly. And that's about half our population, and it's only going to increase. When I was on the board of directors for RTD, we were building several light rail and heavy rail lines. One of them was called the W Line on the West Corridor. And I saw a press release came across my desk. I didn't see it, I heard it, that said it was going to have at-grade quiet crossings. And I thought about it for a minute and thought, well, gee, I don't think that's going to be very good for people that are blind, in particular, because our trains are very quiet. They're electric, the light rail trains, not the heavy rail. Well, some of our heavy rails are electric. Actually, I think they are all electric, as a matter of fact. But light rail is very quiet. And so if you're not going to have a ding sound like ding ding at the at grade crossing where you have pedestrians, then it would put blind pedestrians at risk. And if you get hit by a train, the train wins and you're the loser. So I thought we should look into this a little bit further. And we had a public utility commission hearing, and I attended that, along with all of the engineers, and no offense to white guys in ties, but That's pretty much all there were. All the engineers, other elected officials, and mayors who were telling the judge at the PUC hearing, this is perfectly safe. And I said, if you're a driver in a car, because the gates come down, there are no gates that go across the sidewalk. And again, so ultimately what happened was we went out with the judge for a a field trip to take a look at these at grade crossings. And eventually the judge said that they couldn't be quiet. We had to have a ding ding. So how do we solve that problem where, you know, everyone gets something and also everybody leaves a little something on the table, right? So I guess a good deal is when everybody leaves the room a little unhappy. But so this is going through a bedroom community, and surely they don't want to have ding, 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 ding all night long or all day long. So the compromise was that the ding, ding would always occur, but at a 45 decibel level. And based on ambient noise, as rush hour increases throughout the day, and it goes up and down, the sounds are elevated, but that the ding ding would not surpass 90 decibels. So it would fluctuate, right? And then the other thing was that the community was able to choose the ding ding they like the best, because they're the ones that are going to be hearing it all the time. And so that was the compromise. And in a way, that was smart technology. So the sound on the train is going to reflect whatever is the other noise in the background, the ambient noise in the city, you know, as you have rush hour and so forth.
I love that. And also, it's how telling it is, as you said, when everybody compromise, you not necessarily get everything always what you want, but that doesn't mean what you compromise on that cannot work. And that is actually poor or bad idea. And obviously, you were able to navigate these solutions very effectively. And as a result, have a now not only safer way for people that have specifically just that are disabled with their vision, but we're also dealing with also so many other disabilities too. And I love that how you looking through all of this is how do you help everyone that can really give solution for everyone in community with all the different ranges, not only disability wise, but also with people that are obviously leveraging and utilizing not only public transportation, but also urban living. And with that in mind, I'm curious, Claudia, if you can please share also, how do you see now the urban planning and shifting and leveraging that from your approach and in recommending and design of these smart cities that we're talking about?
Right. So I think more and more we need to encourage people from diverse backgrounds, regardless of disability or, but a real diverse group of people to be at the table. And we need to do that at the beginning through our academic experience. And so I would hope that more and more universities would reach out and actively recruit people, even to educate them in middle school and high school about opportunities that they could have in the future in the various roles of landscape design, urban design, architecture, and so forth. Because when we have more voices at the table, it means that the outcome is richer and broader and supports all people that live in the community and those that aren't even born yet, right? So with the advancement of technology and as it accelerates exponentially, you can imagine that folks with disabilities in particular are going to be left behind because the people who are building these technologies, you know, they're the engineers and they know what's best and they come with their perspective. And again, when you don't have a diverse population chiming in on that perspective, then you can have unintended consequences where people are left out. So let me give you an example. When the smartphone came out in 2007, both Google and Apple, they had a lot of resources available and people with disabilities didn't just show up. But none of those technologies, the smartphones, they weren't accessible at all. Can you imagine?
Wow, that is unfortunate. That is mind-blowing. And how did the
Right.
change currently? Did they made it significant improvements, or what would you
Right.
say?
So that's when they do the overlays and other things to make it accessible. But the accessibility wasn't imagined in the beginning of the architecture in the original code as they were developing it. And so it works kind of, but it's wonky and it's not always accurate. And then what you have are other companies that are trying to do it because it's growing exponentially and that isn't in the original code. So they keep trying to add on and add on. And it really is the elevator on the outside of the skyscraper dilemma, if you ask me. So, but the benefit of being a person who uses that technology with or through the lens of a disability, it enables me to have an imagination of what it could be and should be. So let me give you an example. In 2010, there were three blind people sitting at a bus stop on their way to the Colorado Center for the Blind. And it was in December. It was December 17th, actually. And these three blind people were waiting for the bus early in the morning. And a woman driving in an SUV was driving too fast, hit black ice, and crashed into the three blind people, one of whom was dressed as Santa. And she killed Santa. Yeah. Now, let's think about that for a moment. And here's something that's interesting that I discovered a couple of years ago. In my research, we in America do not track in a category pedestrians with disabilities, injuries, and fatalities in a national database. So there is a national database at the Bureau of Transportation Statistics housed at the United States Department of Transportation, and it's called FARS, FARS, Fatal Accident Reporting System. And in there, they can tell you everything you would want to know in granular detail about accidents resulting in fatalities among pedestrians. They don't have a category that reflects people with disabilities. And therefore, the states don't collect it, and municipalities don't collect that data. So when you think about smart city design and the billions and billions of dollars that are pouring into developing that, you don't even know if you're getting it right because you don't track it to begin with. So we think about safe streets for all, and you want Vision Zero and more walkability and legibility in your community. We need to begin by having a category where we track how well is the technology working? And we should be proactive and not wait until people die at an intersection to put a traffic light there. Right.
Wow. It's just mind-boggling for me, honestly, because we're not talking about just a handful of people. We're talking about hundreds and thousands of people that are already affected just in the United States alone. And then when we think about other parts of the world, it's like if you really want to then be inclusive in terms of accessibility and create a true smart cities, that's the must-have. It's not something that we can negotiate and compromise on. And the fact, as you said, what we don't track, what we don't collect, we don't have the measure to see any improvements. We don't have the data to change that. And I know that some countries are more affected than the others, but regardless, this really give us the clean slate to do this better and smarter. So what would you say now, understanding that clauses of urban planning, seeing where not just transportation itself and transit it's fallen short, but also everything around how is this set up and situated. What would you say? What did you do? You did something, and you created this golden key that I cannot wait to hear more about. And said enough is enough, and let's look at things differently. Do you mind walking us through that?
Sure. So let's take an idea. Again, we're looking at the three blind people sitting at the bus stop. And we have now connected vehicle technology. We call it CV to X, connected vehicles to everything. But what is everything? Who is everything? I ask. Are we just forgetting the blind people or people with disabilities or older adults, half of America nearly? So, one of the things that we know in the transportation world and considering accidents in particular, speed kills. And the bigger the vehicle, the faster you go. And if you are a pedestrian walking in an intersection and you are hit by an SUV, you probably will die. If it's a sedan, you just get your legs crushed. But if it's an SUV, and the interesting thing about the psychology behind people that drive SUVs is, or any car, the bigger the car, somehow the faster they want to go. And so that means a longer stopping time. And if you have unsafe road conditions like black ice, then it's even more of a problem, as you can imagine. So let's just take the three people sitting at the bus stop. And we have the connected vehicle technology, the CV to X. And I have a formula, it's called CV to X is less than P to the MR, P being the pedestrian, and MR being the multiple realities. That's just my imagination, though nobody else knows this. And so, but if they had our golden key with them, and today we know, or you may know this, but there are at least 2,000 data points that are going from a vehicle. Today's vehicles are just big computers, right? And all that technology is going out into the cloud, and then different users are taking that anonymous data and determining road conditions, mitigating congestion, those kinds of things, and then using it to guide people to slow down or, you know, what have you. But it doesn't go back to the driver or the pedestrian that could be nearby. So our technology, the golden key, well, we were looking to connect into all of that. So you would have a complete circle of getting that information back to the people who need it the most. That's the driver and the pedestrians. And we want to make sure that if you have Vision Zero, zero fatalities. Right now in America, there are about 40,000 people a year dying on our roads and our highways. We can do a lot better. And we should do a lot better. So I think the golden key is a technology that would reside in the smartphone and an individual, whomever they are. And quite honestly, people without disabilities. I mean, you find a lot of people that are walking around and they're lost, they don't know what they're doing. And in large part, in some ways, that's because we rely on GPS, what we call extended cognition. We're relying on things outside of our brain to tell us what to do. And so the muscle in our brain, the hippocampus in this case, which assists you in navigating in the built environment and the digital world. So we're going to be navigating in two worlds simultaneously. It takes a cognitive load. We want to make sure that it's streamlined and through the golden key. We'd be able to support people with disabilities and without to live safer lives, to be more efficient, and of course, to be safer.
Wow, that is tremendously not only innovative but also efficient, and I can't even wait to see like how this look like in the real world, right? The real life. I'm sure that everybody who had a chance to tap into Golden Key, and before we go into further, the Golden Key is also built on most innovative technology, which is built on AI and other framework. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. It's generative AI using computer vision and computer language with large language models.
Wow, that is just like mind-boggling. My head is just exploding right now, just thinking of it, because more and more I listen, on some AI solutions in healthcare, for example, but now looking also at AI in daily life and something so important and practical. And also the example you gave about three blind pedestrians during the winter and that unfortunate incident where one of them was killed. It just shows how much could be prevented if we also look at things from right perspective and include everything holistically, right? Instead of looking very myopically or just from one perspective. And that way, not only that pedestrians get protected, but also drivers get more alert and also more responsibility what they need to handle in order to provide the safety and everything around them. So
now, one of the things I wanted to mention also, two things, and to go back to the safe pedestrians. In that instance, in the example of the three blind people waiting for the bus, had they had the golden key and it was a connected, truly a connected loop, the golden key could have said to the pedestrians, hey, these are some, you know, unsafe road conditions and some people are in control. We recommend you step 3 feet behind the bus bench. Mm. Maybe that would have saved their lives. On another note, consider this. When you press the button to signal you want to cross the street, yes. Normally, you know, it's however long, maybe it's 10 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. Now imagine you're in a wheelchair. You need more time because the wheelchair needs to get over the arc of the road. With our technology and smart city design and intelligent transportation systems, that pedestrian in a wheelchair should be able to extend the cycle of the traffic signal to enable them to cross safely and communicate to the driver that this traffic light will be longer because a pedestrian in a wheelchair is crossing.
Mm. And all of those solutions actually seems like it's very hard to do with older models and existing infrastructures. As you said, it's very difficult to, some things we can alter, but it's not always a lot of room, right, for improvement. But with the new solution that can also, at least, because it's impossible, not every city going to be smart city, is not going to happen overnight. So what do you do? I can see how Golden Key is going to be so essential alternative for all those issues that exist and how quickly can make tremendous improvements with existing.
Precisely. And just imagine that you're at the airport, and this has happened to me here in Denver. We have a large airport, you know, and sometimes in the summer, you know, we get tornadoes. So on the loudspeakers, you're going to hear, oh, a tornado is on the tarmac. Go and shelter in place in a safe place. And a blind person is like, huh? What? Where is that? With our technology, we'll be able to show people very specifically to the centimeter where to go, when to go, and how to remain safe along with everybody else. And so I think the applications are really limitless. And, you know, we can just think about whatever is in your imagination, we can do that.
Wow, I love that. And Elsa, it's so true. When you're dealing with highly congested environments, like you just mentioned, DIA airport, when it's a lot of commotion and it's a panic, let's just say a disaster, or like that could truly be full blown due to tornado, is like, how fast do you move? And how do you make sure you can, because you can't obviously see people around you, so how you don't get hit or fallen down, or how do you also know how to step aside or how to navigate the shift and change? I think it's also crucial because a lot of times I'm seeing a lot of, as a traveler, I see a lot people traveling that have disability, and they're not always accompanied with somebody else.
Right.
And they wanted to have that independence and be able to do this independently. I can immediately think this actually can work for them, even though they don't have anybody around, and still be very self-independent and be able to work in ways that they feel safe. I think the safety issue is crucial here.
And keep in mind, you know, folks that don't have disabilities are lost also. If they're in an unfamiliar environment, they won't know. So just like a curb cut, everybody likes the curb cut. You're taking your luggage or your roller skating or the stroller, and you're able to move about the city easier because of the curb cut. But we did that for people in a wheelchair. So if you think about it, the golden key, while it may act like a curb cut and be an accessibility tool for folks with disabilities, it winds up to be a helpful tool for everybody else. If you like to use GPS in navigating when you're driving, you're going to love the golden key because it's going to support you navigating an unfamiliar environment indoors that's pretty complex, like an airport, an office complex, a medical facility, and so on.
Excellent point, and it really puts in perspective how the impact of these innovative solutions affect community accessibility, but also improvements that are needed to help with their daily living. And also specifically, as you mentioned earlier, we have very strong aging population. And even just if you do not end up, as fortunately for yourself, losing the sight as 5-year-old, and you know, what about these adults that also been not only, you know, changing the environment as well on top of it, also changing what level of independence that they can have. I think it's a very staggering and also very important. So I'm curious now, as the Golden Keys seems like a phenomenal solution here, how do you see the future trends and leadership? How should also leadership and these future trends adjust to these urban innovations that can really create what you set to do? What are you on a mission to make it happen?
Well, I think that's a great question. And there are two components to it. I mean, there are some people who make a living on not having things fixed because they have to keep fixing them. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you have something that is sort of okay, but not really, then it's kind of their bread and butter to keep fixing it. Or you can just fix it and get on with doing something different. I think that there is a time lag for the acceptance and understanding of what smart cities look like. I don't think anybody really knows yet what it looks like or what it should look like. And actually, that's why we should be at the table right now, so that we are building it again at the beginning of the foundation so it works. Not like having the elevator on the outside of the skyscraper, but really building it correctly from within. Because if you want to get massive acceptance, it needs to be really accessible to all people wherever they are in the stage of their life cycle. And we know that the more people that use it, the more acceptance that you're going to have. And encourage people to be more engaged and have public transit. And if you think about it, we're having this big insurgence of electric autonomous vehicles in many cities in America. But how well are they integrated into the entire ecosystem of intelligent transportation systems? And when it's addressing those particular populations, you know, people with disabilities, older adults, and, you know, and it's just growing exponentially. Again, keeping in mind that it's going to be integrating with the digital world as well. Those are all going to be, and you think about climate change and look at poor California again. More fires that are massive disasters. And how do you get the most vulnerable people in our communities safely and effectively and efficiently out of harm's way?
That is such a thought-provoking point as well. And I'm glad you addressed this, because we're dealing very rapidly changing, and we're seeing natural disasters, unprecedented natural disasters. And then we also see man-made disasters, and you spot on. And as a result, we're seeing aftermath when something cannot be controlled, like due to the factors of the wind, the fire is already on, and in which direction is going to go. We also saw how many people fortunately lost their lives, how many of them actually were actually disabled. We have stories that we're seeing the parents stay because of the disabled son, or the wife stay because of the disabled husband. And then also, affected not only them as a humans, but also animals, the pets, and then of course wildlife, and how much now everything shifted to so that we're seeing animals in the streets you never seen in downtown parts of the different areas in LA. It's like just unheard of, right? But in the same time, like, everybody's seeking a refuge. And where the refuge is going to come. And we've seen the same thing similarly happen in Japan with earthquake.
Right.
All the other
tsunamis, earthquakes, floods, hurricanes. And, right here in our great state of Colorado, we have massive fires, wildfires, and they're in very rugged terrain. We've got those hotshot firefighters and, we've got the planes and all of that, but still, we really need to consider really where we're living and what is going to be resistant to these extreme changes in these climate events. And we, I think, as our, what I'm hearing is, as a nation, we're there. We know they're there. And to rebuild over and over and over again, thinking I'm going to do the same thing and hope for a different outcome, that's insanity, right? We know that's going to happen again. It's going to burn down again. So where can we live that doesn't put so much pressure on our natural environment? So maybe a more dense, vertical, urban environment in some locations would be a better for preserving our habitat overall. And remember, when those trees burn down, that causes a whole bunch of other problems too, and that reduces the oxygen. No more trees bringing oxygen, so it's an ongoing cycle, a bad cycle of events.
The excellent points, and I can definitely echo what you're saying. And I'm seeing that some of the countries, we're already seeing how much this advanced in terms of what is being used in terms of materials that are more prone to heat protection and in very hot environments or dry environments that also can prevent easily fires and these natural disasters that we're talking about, or man-made disasters for that matter, but also how to truly build a smart city with everybody in mind. I'm sure you have a prototype and models and things that you've seen and foreseen how can work very well with urban planners, with preservation of historic monuments, but in the same time also creation of what's needed in addition to working architecturally to something that is appealing, that is exciting, but that is also safe.
Right. And we can't be building more and more houses where there's no water.
Yes.
We can't be building more and more houses in rugged mountainous terrains because we like to be in the woods, we need to really, really think. And that's going to be a collaborative approach with our local municipalities, really, and our state governments, to come together with our citizens to say, this is not sustainable. It's not resilient. And if you think about what we have coming in the next 50 or 100 years, is there enough water to sustain that? Well, right now, no.
And you're spot on. And if we, again, don't research, don't plan, things are going to be jeopardizing. Even with the great urban systems, if they cannot be sustainable, then what's the point? And I think we're playing catch 22. In one way, is we're reactive, the needs needs to happen, but yet we're not inclusive and we're not proactive in terms of what that entails. And what would you recommend, and what did you arrive to when you said it's so important to have a seat at a table and it's so important to be involved in these conversations? What is something that audience and leaders that are watching and listening can do to make that happen?
Well, I think what happens is when you have a bunch of people with different perspectives sitting at the table, and you can have a brainstorming event, but this is the problem. How are we going to solve it? And then we throw out different ideas that other people come from. Well, I live this way, or I live that way, or my history, my ancestry, my experience. This is how I live my life today. This is what would make it better for tomorrow. I think then you can come up with some very exciting new ideas, and again, using your imagination in a creative way to solve the problems of tomorrow.
Oh my goodness. I love this, and specifically when we're seeing again disability as well aging population. Right now, neither of those two components are addressed effectively in any larger cities that we're looking, let alone the small ones in different towns, where you're even more so codependent of your neighbor and everybody else, and public transportation and other systems as a supplement in order for someone to have a decent life. So lastly, in closing, when we look at your trajectory that really shaped your leadership, I know that your disability not only brought up so many issues, but also I'm just being beyond impressed how much you took that and used that as opportunities and focus on solutions, and also focus to be that voice for voiceless, for others that don't have education, understanding, or knowledge that you do. So how this carved your leadership, and then also, if you don't mind, share what would you recommend for everybody watching and listening, and what would be one of the core a leadership advice for them to not to overlook what we're just talking about?
I think that's such an important question. And I think that we as leaders, and we're all leaders in our own way, really, and we can come at it from different perspectives, but that we begin it with kindness and compassion and empathy. And I'm never going to know where you came from, but I'm here and I'm open and I'm listening. Because we all have the right to live our best lives. We all have a right to have a high quality of life and not just to survive, but to thrive. And together we can build spaces and places that support everyone to live their best self, whatever that might be.
I love that. That is such a beautiful reflection. And if one thing you would like to see, or you think that could move the needle from the leaders, or one trait that can get us there faster, what that would be?
I think in large part in many of our local and state and even federal governments, they've done a fairly good job, I would say, over the years. Well, there's a lot of room for improvement, but I think we've got a well-established framework for empowering people who are living with a disability or an older adult to be engaged, but really it's the private sector that's going to take this ball to the finish line. So, and if they're smart, the Googles, the Apples, the engineering and design firms all need to be insisting that people from those various backgrounds are at the table and driving innovation forward.
Love it. I can't agree more. And if we all
Mm-hmm.
do our own part, world will be so much better and much more inclusive. And as a result, quality of life for everyone will be improved exponentially. So, Claudia, for everybody that is watching and listening, had a chance to hear about Golden Key Solution, and also I'll learn about what is missing in current urban planning and anticipating the change with aging population and their disabilities, as well existing disabilities that we already have, including vision impairment, and changing a landscape of how we live. Where they can learn more about it, get engaged, and support your efforts.
Well, thank you for asking. You can go and visit our website at www.aat, as in Tom, S as in Sam, dot today, TODAY.
At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the World Messenger, Isabella Lundberg. each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?